Junior Power. This is Lynn McGregor.
And this is David Neely. And this next half hour of Senior Power will be filled with information and entertainment for
mature audiences only.
Next, we're going to have on with us Maine's longest serving judge. Now, this judge, Justice Donald G. Alexander, spent 41 years on the bench. And he has some interesting stories, and Lynn, I will let you take it from here, but welcome to the program, Judge Alexander.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to join you, and what would you like to start talking about first, 41 years ago or last week? Which way do you want to go?
Well, why don't you start off with telling us how you came to be a judge? What brought you to that point?
Well, I was working. I started off after I went to college down in Brunswick at Bowdoin, and then I went to law school out in Chicago. I knew some people from Senator Muskie's office. They helped me get a job in Washington, and then I ultimately wound up working with Senator Muskie for a couple of years, and then my wife and I came back to Maine, and I started off with the Attorney General's office, then became Deputy Attorney General when Joe Brennan was running for governor, worked on the election and won that, but then Governor Longley appointed me as a district judge right before the change of administration, so that's how I started. I was interested in doing that. So that's how I got started as being a judge, and have enjoyed it ever since.
Well, that's just wonderful.
and years later, then, was it Governor King that appointed you to the Maine State Supreme Court? Yes.
Yep. It was Governor King. I mean, I only served on the district court about a year, and then Governor Brennan appointed me to the Superior Court, and then in 1998. Governor King appointed me to the Supreme Court, where I then served for basically a little more than 21 years.
Tell me, I think it's a good thing because I've never had to be to court. If you could explain the differences in the three different kinds of court.
There's not a heck of a lot of difference between the District Court and the Superior Court, except the Superior Court does the jury trials. The Superior Court does appeals from state and local administrative agencies, zoning, Board of Appeals, or, you know, Department of Environmental Protection, things like that. The District Court does all the sort of first appearances of cases. You know, the first time people show up in court is generally matter in District Court. District Court has exclusive jurisdiction of the family matters and all, and as a result of reforms, that was started in about 2010, completed in 2015, they sort of have joint authority over criminal cases short of jury trials that are now sort of consolidated in the county offices to have more efficiency and less repetitive work on the criminal cases. But in each one, the trial judges are very, you know, actively involved in managing the case dockets. We tend to have a smaller number of judges and smaller number of support staff than a lot of states of similar sort of demographics and population size and all. And we have a lot of good, hardworking judges. They're appointed for all of them, District Court, Superior Court, Supreme Court, all appointed for 7-year terms. And we have a tradition of relatively nonpartisan and skill-oriented appointment of judges. Makes for a fairly collegial working group and good relationships with the bar.
I didn't know that.
You know, you mentioned with the Superior Court, what was written up about you, by the way, I think in the Bangor Daily News, but as well, it's on the University of Chicago Law School website. It said that you had a lasting impact on Maine law with your book, The Maine Jury Instruction Manual. Do you want to elaborate on that some?
Well, what happened with that was I was doing jury trial work, and Chief Justice at the time, Vincent McCusick, said they were getting a lot of confusion in some of the jury instructions, and he knew there were jury instruction procedures, processes developed for other states, and he asked me if I could basically put together, you know, a set of instructions that, you know, judges could use, and that expanded into a book for jury instructions that first came out in 1985, and the next edition is at the printer, and it's been either updated or reproduced every year since. Next edition is at the printer, and it's going to be out in early 2022, or may get published in late 2021.
Does that go handed? That's to the jury, correct?
Those are the cases to the jury.
But
basically it gives the elements. Gives the elements of various, you know, actions, criminal or civil, because it provides recommended instructions for types of things. I know district court sometimes tends to use it. District court judges like to use it too, in some cases. But part of the process. I'm glad to have helped out with that, because I had a lot of other people helping me. A lot of judges gave me very good advice on it and suggestions and reviewed drafts and all. So it's hardly something that's just my proposal. And I copied some things over the years from other jury instruction manuals for the federal court and from other states.
That's incredible. Because now that you've got it established, it's probably easier to, you know, to update it year to year than to start all over again.
Oh yeah. But you have a form. You get everything in a Word program on your computer, a Word file on your computer, and you do that. And I've done the same thing for my book on Maine appellate practice, and for a book I wrote on criminal practice when we adopted the new rules, sort of making a unified criminal process in both the district and the superior courts. But, you know, as long as you take the cases as they come out and make the updates as you go along, it's not too tough. If you hold everything till somebody wants an update, then it's more of a challenge.
Justice Alexander, I have to bring this up. Governor Janet Mills, who attended the Maine School of Law in the 70s, this is according to Bangor Daily News, with your wife, said she would have nominated you to the bench, as did her predecessors, speaking to the bipartisanship of your nominations, by the way, James Longley, Joe Brennan, John McKernan, Angus King, John Baldacci, and Paul LePage, but you had actually declined, saying you did not want to be the oldest person ever nominated to the bench in Maine, so did not seek reappointment. But that doesn't sound quite right based on what I'm hearing from you.
Well, no, I figured I'd done 41 years. I was looking for other opportunities. I did not want to go for a 7-year term. I thought it was time to sort of looking for people with, different generations and different ideas and things like that. I mean, I'm quite honored that she would have been considering me, but that was, it was a choice I made to try to move on to other things, and certainly something I wanted to do. And I've been given tremendous opportunities by her and by the Maine legislature to do other things since. She appointed me to the Maine Commission on Indigent Legal Services and to the Uniform Laws Commission, and then some legislators and others I knew asked me to help out with the apportionment process we just completed. And I'm delighted to have been able to have those opportunities. They're a little different than the judge work I was doing.
Medicare is so confusing. I didn't know where to get help, but I wouldn't call a plumber in Arizona to fix my pipes in Maine. So don't call some out-of-state 800 number to navigate Medicare plans when your help is right here at home. The Senior Planning Center represents all Medicare Health and Part D plans. They have trusted professional experts in every county. You should call them for your free Medicare review.
Call 223-6565 today. That's 223-6565.
Welcome back to Senior Power. I'm Dave Neely, and
I'm Lynn McGregor.
We are talking with Justice Donald Alexander, whom had served longer than any other judge in Maine's history. I think it was, they said it was a William Penn Whitehouse, the state's longest second-serving justice. Judge served 35 years, and you had served some 41 years. I guess after 41 years serving the courts in Maine, you had every right to suggest that maybe you ought to try something different. But your willingness to help in these other ways, my guess is, weren't necessarily compensated the same. Was some of that volunteer? Or
basically, it is volunteer, yes. I'm glad to do it as volunteer. I want to point out, you know, William Penn Whitehouse was, you know, the longest-serving judge for 100 years. But since that time, because there was a process in the 80s and 90s, they're appointing a lot of people who were fairly young judges. Justice Roland Cole, who is still an active retired judge today and who graduated from the University of Maine the same year I graduated from Bowdoin, he, as an active judge, served 38 and a half years. So he now is the second longest serving judge ever. Whereas Judge Whitehouse, Justice Cole wasn't on the Supreme Court, but he was on, for most of his time, he was on the Superior Court.
We were wondering what the average age of a judge was, and it sounds like you got into this early on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was appointed when I was 36. I was sworn in on December 29th, 1978. And at the time, and for a little more than a decade thereafter, there were a lot of judges who were appointed in their 30s. And, for example, Chief Justice Soffley, who just retired, was appointed as a judge, I think, when she was 35. Justice Ellen Gorman, who's still on the Supreme Court, was appointed when I think she was either 33 or 34 originally to the district court. All of us were originally appointed to the district court. And there's a lot of other judges, some of whom are pretty senior status today, who were appointed in their 30s also. It was not unusual then for somebody in their late 30s to be appointed as a judge. It's been less frequently that's happened recently, though one of the most recent appointments, Judge Sarah Gilbert, was appointed when she was 38. She began service this last February.
So are people, although that's the exception, excuse me, not the rule. Are generally people, when they get to be a judge, older?
In recent years, generally they've been somewhat older, but it may be switching back too. I don't know. I mean, certainly the key thing is what experience you've had in life and in court that can make you good judges, because there are a lot of people in their 30s who try a lot of cases and who are before the court a lot and can make them good judges. One of the great advantages of people in their 30s, of people who are been lawyers for 20 years or less, is they have a lot more comfort with the digital age we're in. Some of us, I'm just totally surprised and interested by the work a lot of people were doing on the Apportionment Commission. But we had a couple of people in their 20s that were very valuable in terms of helping out with their knowledge of digital, districting and dealing with this huge volume of census data and making it into districts that were pretty comfortable with people. Of course, the senior person doing that was former Congressman David Emery, who's probably one of the preeminent national experts on applying the Census Bureau to draw districts. Luckily, we've had him available in Maine to help out with that over the past several censuses. But the young people are very, very, very valuable in that too on the commission. As a lot of young lawyers provide very valuable service in a lot of things, and can and will be good judges when they get appointed.
And Justice, I have always been curious about this particular issue, and that is that a judge must see so many different types of legal cases that it isn't necessarily in line with what maybe some of their background is, and yet they still have to make a ruling. And my guess is there are times that you actually have to research a little bit of that area when you have a case like that, if it's an area of the law that you aren't quite as well apprised on.
Oh, that's right, because the reality is there are probably four or five areas of the law, and almost no judge comes to the court with having had experience in all of them. And so you've got to, talk to other judges and know when to stop and look something up. For example, when I came to the court, and it was to the district court, I had no background or experience in family law. But on the other hand, I had to get into it pretty quick, and so I read the statutes about it, talked to some other judges about it, and tried to get on top of it as best I could. But the reality is, particularly with practice more specialized today perhaps than it used to be, it's very rare to get a judge appointed who has had significant experience in all the types of cases that regularly come before the courts. And I say there are about four, you can even categorize it in maybe like four or five categories of frequent cases, plus there are categories of less frequent cases like election cases. You know, that's reality, and you just got to try to do it as best as possible, and that's the way we do, and we've got pretty good judges in Maine who do that, the various experience levels.
You know, and I'm wondering, Chris, I'm very biased. You see, with senior power, we're always talking about seniors as mentors and that indeed they can become role models, not just for their children, but their grandchildren. And
yeah.
And I'm just curious because, I mean, imagine family court, a lot of it might be divorce law or whatnot, and some of these things may have nothing to do with age. But I'd like to think as we get older, we do get wiser. And so perhaps you had less people who, let's say, were 50 and over or 60 and over in your courtroom than you may have with people under that age group. But did you notice any trends like that through the years serving as a judge?
Well, the reality is that most of the people, as they're transitioning from sort of adolescence through it into adulthood, through it into their own areas of life, through it into areas of what self-confidence, more of that, because people have problems and issues in making all those transitions in life, tends to be with younger people. So, yeah, in terms of the ages of people who are before the court for family cases, for criminal cases, for things like that, tends to gear to, you know, sort of younger than the average age of the population. It's a little different in maybe cases like, you know, real estate boundary disputes and things like that. I would guess that the people involved in those cases tend to be a little, you know, older than the average age of the population. When a couple people, you know, owning waterfront on Mount Desert Island are disputing whether the property lines here or 4 or 5 feet over that way. You know, the reality is for the great volume of cases, the criminal cases, the family cases, things like that, the age of the people who are before the court as parties to the case tends to be below what the sort of median age of the population might be. But it's always been that way. I don't mean to say there's been any change that way. That's just because, you know, transitioning from being dependent on someone else in adolescence and into adulthood and finding your place in society and in work, in social life, in jobs, in family relations, those transitions also tend to create the most problems that cause people to wind up in court.
Justice Alexander, hats off to you for not just being the longest serving judge in the state of Maine, but for continuing to serve in numerous ways. And an additional kudos for being in your late 70s and chopping your own firewood. By the way, that's real senior power, too.
Yes.
And thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Glad to do it. But remember, I know a lot of other people who are as active intellectually and physically and things like that who are in their, you know, a lot older than I was. Vincent McCusick, he died at, I think, 92, but he was extremely active in doing national cases up through the into the middle or late of his 80s. So, and there's a lot of other people I know, too. I'm not alone. There's a lot out there who are involved in law and other business and education who are still active going along, too.
Excellent comments for Senior Power Radio. Thank you again,
okay. Chief.
Thank you again, Justice Alexander, for joining us today.
So, David, if I want to listen to last week's episode, where do I go to do that?
All you have to do is go to seniorpower.me. That is seniorpower.me, short for Maine, seniorpower.me, and listen to your favorite episode of Senior Power. One of the things we have learned here on Senior Power is that we have a large population of those folks 65 and over in the state of Maine. In fact, on average, about 22% of the people in each county in the state of Maine are 65 and over. And with that comes a lot of potential opportunities. disease, but also with that comes a need to understand Medicare, because when folks get on or about that age of 65, they need to take a serious look at signing up for Medicare. So with us today is somebody who knows a lot about that, Julie Turner. She's the location manager for the Senior Planning Center in Sanford. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Hi, thanks for having me, David.
Julie, we have a lot of 65 plus in Maine, but tell us what the split is between new Mainers, those who have chosen Maine to come up here and retire, and those that have been in Maine all their life, because I'm sure you see quite a mix of seniors in your office.
I'm actually seeing more of the out-of-staters that are moving in right now, which I think is partially because of the time of year as we hit the summer tour season.
Yeah, and interesting. So you have mostly folks that are coming in that are first signing up for Medicare? Do you have a healthy mix of those that are first signing up, but as well that have been on for a few years?
Mostly the first signing up for Medicare and doing a lot of work helping people get their Part A and their Part B and picking a plan that fits their needs best.
And when you say Part A and Part B, do you want to explain that a little bit for some folks who haven't even looked at Medicare yet?
Sure. Part A of Medicare covers your hospitals and your inpatient days. Part B of Medicare covers your outpatient and your doctor's visit. A and B together is what we call original Medicare, and it covers you at approximately 80%.
And then, of course, there's the Part D, the drug program, and obviously that's something that you have to discuss with folks as well, right?
Every new client of ours, I go through what's called Medicare 101. And what that does is it just breaks down the different pieces of Medicare, explains the A, the B, talks a little bit about Part D and their drug coverage and what options they have to supplement that 80% or the remaining 20%.
And so when you say supplement, that's where they came up with years back literally what they call the supplement plans, which are used to span the whole alphabet, but ultimately it fills in the holes, as you say, covers the copays of what is needed after Medicare Part A, B, and D do their work, their magic. But there's, well, something now called Medicare Advantage, and explain how sometimes that may be even a better fit than just adding a supplement for clients.
What happens a lot is there's a lot of confusion for people because they think when they hear the word supplement that they're getting a Medicare supplement. And what actually happens is there's many options to supplement your A and your B and your Part D for your drugs. And one route is to go to Medicare supplement with a prescription drug plan, which both cost premium dollars monthly for you, but give you overall that 20% coverage that you're looking for. Then there's Medicare Advantage, which everybody sees on TV and hears on the radio and everything. And what those plans do is they cover Part A, Part B, and Part D of Medicare and put it all under one plan administered by one carrier. So it's a little bit more convenient for folks to be dealing with one rather than a couple different carriers. Part D also gives people what we like to call extra benefits. So it gives them a little bit of dental coverage, a little bit of vision coverage and hearing coverage, and helps fill the gaps that Medicare leaves open for people.
So in other words, the Medicare Advantage is a little bit more comprehensive medical care, like many of us had with the plan coverage with group health care we might have had with our employers.
I like to compare, when I'm talking to somebody who's just recently retired or planning to retire, I do compare a Medicare Advantage plan to a group plan because it works very similarly, and there's co-payment and co-insurance, which is exactly what they're used to for group. So I find that a lot of people really understand and lean towards the Advantage plan.
And as well, they have opportunities with Advantage plan for other benefits, like the over-the-counter allowance for things like, well, typical things that we all use, whether it be toothpaste, Band-Aids, I mean, name it, right? And then there are some that I've heard even help with transportation costs and or can help with groceries with a debit card. So they've really got a range of opportunities to select from with the various insurance carriers, right?
There's different plans have different wellness wallet or money available for people to send. Some people use that wellness wallet to help cover eyeglasses.
Great. And of course, we're very proud of what you do and what the Senior Planning Center does here in the state of Maine. And thank you so much, Julie, for your time today.
We all know the love of a pet. And next I have this story by Hunter Howe called The Love Is Something Fierce. I knelt down and wrapped my arms around him. I told him it was okay, that his daddy was there. Then the brown liquid invaded his vein. My best friend Breeze slumped to the floor, fell over asleep forever. I stood and took one final look at the precious little fellow, thanked the compassionate staff at the veterinary clinic, clutched his red leash and collar, and drove home. Alone. I wondered how many of you have experienced the same gut-wrenching, numbing grief. Our pets connect people. We accept compliments on them with great pride. After all, our pets are family and extension of ourselves. One lady told me she loved her dog something fierce. The problem is that our pets lead too short a life. Before you know it, a medical problem or old age brings a hard decision. When to say goodbye. Your pet doesn't get to share in your decision, but he depends on you to take care of him. Breeze wasn't ready to die, only 3 and a half. He had an illness particular to the breed. Sometimes the best thing we can do is let go. We all dread the last day, the last walk, the last treat, last eye contact, last hug, devastation. When I told people about my loss, they responded in different ways. A cousin reflected on his dog put to sleep 16 years ago and choked up. A woman I just met lost her dog 10 years ago. Her eyes misted up and her lips pressed together in solemn sadness. A close friend thinking about her bunny said, "I sometimes feel the panic and think to myself, no, they can't be gone. Time helps, but not enough." Another friend said, "I know that the love they gave us so freely and without reservation is written in our hearts." There were more sympathetic comments, and they helped. Sorrow shared is sorrow lessened. So, do you do it again? Do you put yourself through another last day? The reaction is, "I can't do that. It hurts too much, and it lasts too long." Yes, it does. Waves of emotion sweep out of nowhere, capsizing our hearts. However, I believe that the years of happiness somehow must outweigh what we all know is the finality of death and the severe ache it brings. I suppose part of life is dealing with those clashing emotions, but I've decided I won't let one last awful day win over years of pure joy. Breeze sees life for all it's worth. He embodied spirit and energy. Handsome, he ran like a thoroughbred horse. He was a breath of fresh air, a soothing wind, my own personal Breeze. He tried so hard, he defined pure joy. However, our pets are not forgotten. To all our departed friends, thank you for sharing your lives with us, giving us the privilege to care for you, and helping to make our lives more pleasurable. Yes, we love our pets in life, something fierce, and we miss them when they're gone. Something fierce.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Senior Power.
My insurance kept going up and up and up and up.
I was getting a lot of mail about Medicare.
I could never have navigated through the loopholes.
Mainers across the state are finding help at Senior Planning Center, which represents all major Medicare health plans.
Senior Planning Center was a lifesaver.
Senior Planning Center did it all.
Gave me all my options and signed me up with what I needed within an hour.
Call 223-6565. 223-6565. Help when it matters most. SeniorPlanningCenter.com.